Yo, my friends, family, frogs, yunts, and gamers. It's your host, Rogatachi. I'm back to bring you another episode of the Crypto Podcast. So incredible, they just made the Yunt Mech the cover of the next Parallel comic issue. And I know that is 100% because of us and this podcast, and definitely not for any other reason whatsoever. But I'm hyped about it. And speaking of Parallel, that is just who we have on to talk to today. We have both people from Echelon and TCG side of things, just the whole smorgasbord of Parallel. So I'm super hyped for that. Of course, Yunt Capital is a longtime investor in Parallel, as well as me personally. But we really think this is a project that is going to change gaming, period. Notice how I didn't say crypto gaming. I said gaming, period. But first, before we get into all the juicy stuff, I got to let you know who it be, what it be, how it be, and it be the crypto podcast, Goodwill Yunting, created by Yunt Capital.
So, you've got some money, but how are you going to use it? You want to spend when you know you should be saving. What if you could spend and save at the same time? Set yourself free with completely flexible, self-repaying loan technology. Seize the power of Alchemix. Your only debt is time. What was once inconceivable is now within your grasp.
Shout out to this week's sponsor, Alchemix. The Aave Vault strategies are now live on Alchemix, and obviously Aave is one of the best and safest places to get yield, in my opinion. The addition of these new vaults adds further yield sources to the always continually expanding ecosystem. Go over to alchemix.fi to check out those new Aave vaults and all the other awesome vaults they have, and to find out more. Thank you, Alchemix.
If you're new to the internet, Goodwill Yunting is the crypto podcast for degens by degens. We are here never with financial advice. You don't want that from me or any of us, but we're here to offer Goodwill Alpha on all the best crypto-related topics, projects, people to yunt into. Each episode, various members of Yunt Capital will hop on to explore your favorite crypto, NFT, DeFi topics. Your yunts, alongside our dope guests, create a podcast you never want to miss. As we mentioned, we have Chads from Parallel today, a Yunt and Echelon member in Bew, and Kalos, one of the founding members of Parallel, and just an overall Chad Giga brain that I really relish anytime I get to hang out with them and talk with him. So I'm hyped to have them both here today. We're going to be talking all things Parallel, all things Echelon, all things Prime, all things Colony, which maybe you don't even know about Colony, but that shit's going to blow your mind. So I'm excited. Welcome to you all. Thanks for coming today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, happy to be here. Hell of an opening there.
Yeah. Likewise. It's been a while since I've been on the pod, but thrilled to be back.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thrilled to have you both back on, as this is the second Parallel episode we're doing. I think you were there. Maybe Meta was there for the first time, Bew. I don't remember, but with Kalos, I know. So we have done this before, but for the new listener, can you start with a very brief intro into like who you are, your background, maybe before and after crypto? And Bew, maybe you can do it after with your Parallel and Echelon kind of life and career, so people get an idea of what that is.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I'm one of the founding members of Parallel. A bunch of us got together in the early days to create it. My prior experience, I spent 11 years at a bank designing stock trading systems, anti-money laundering, anti-terrorist financing systems, real estate secured lending systems across one of the largest banks in North America. And I left that and I started, you know, building startups, some successful, some not. Eventually during the pandemic, I think we got tired of playing games that, you know, were just started to feel a little bit redundant. And I convinced a bunch of my friends to get together and kind of painted a picture of this new sci-fi game And thankfully they were, you know, compelled to dive in and try and create this with me. So that's a bit about me, and my handle's Kalos. And that's, if you ever are fortunate enough to match up against me in ranked, you will probably bag a win.
Don't sell yourself short, man.
It's always a good fight, though.
Yeah, I will emote you to the ground. Like I will try and I will demoralize you with the emotes, but you will probably still bag a win. But yeah, so that's just a little bit about me. Go ahead, View.
I'm Bew. Some of you will know me kind of like from this podcast, and others may know me from my role with the Echelon Prime Foundation. I've been in and out of crypto for a really, really long time. Wish I had a lot of that Bitcoin from the old days back, but here we are. I've been involved with Parallel for quite a while, ever since it was, sort of brought to us by our good friend Meta, and, you know, both on the investor side and now on the EP side, work with Echelon full time now, focusing on kind of like technical product, software, and, business development and operation stuff. So yeah, full time Echelon, all in on what we're building here.
Sexy. I love it from both of you. So before we dive into things, Kalos, your baby, the trading card game, is now out in the wild, really, in closed beta, but a closed beta that seems to be growing daily. From a personal, emotional, all the things, human standpoint, how are you feeling about it? What are the emotions here? How do you feel about the reception the game has received? How things are shaping up and looking? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, there's like thousands of people playing it, which is really amazing. And I think like you feel, a slight sense of relief in that, like, okay, it's real. People can play it. They have fun with it. They're really liking it. But like that doesn't last long in my mind. I think it ends up very much quickly reverting back to, okay, what's next? What else do we have to get done? Referencing back to, some of the kind of bigger vision around the card game and what we want to build and why we want to build it. So like it's one of these things where you feel, it doesn't feel, this is going to sound funny, but it doesn't necessarily feel good. It feels more like a sense of relief. And then it feels like an overwhelming sense of, oh no, I've got a huge list now that I've got this in people's hands that I need to get done so I can put it in more people's hands. So it's one of these funny feelings where like it doesn't last long. It's a little bit fleeting, because as soon as you feel like you've given people something that they really like and they play a lot, you have this urgency to ensure that you diversify the way that they can play it. You add more ways to engage with it, and that it stays and grows from where it is rather than just like pitters off into, an unimportant existence. And so I think obviously, we all kind of celebrated the fact that, it's in people's hands and they're enjoying it and they're playing it. And the numbers in terms of gameplay, are really incredible. I think we're just probably today about to clip over 550,000 games played, which is a lot when you think about like the length of a game in terms of like 10 or 12 minutes. Yeah. And in closed beta, it's shocking, right? Like, I mean, north of, there's a bunch of numbers I can cite that I think are interesting. We can probably dig into it later, but it feels good for that brief moment. And it's really amazing. It feels a little bit humbling for sure that like people actually like it. And I think that's a testament to like Koji and who's Mr. Gone and the game team, shout out those guys, as well as the art team and the VFX team and all the engineers. Like, it feels great, but I think we're all very much focused on a much bigger picture than just what we have today.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that. That definitely makes sense. I will say though, you guys have created a great product. I'm someone who never played TCGs besides like some Yu-Gi-Oh when I was a kid, and I fell in love with it quite quickly and have been really addicted since. My gaming computer has actually been in the shop for the last week, and I'm getting withdrawal. I'm like, if I like see a trading card or a deck of cards on the table, I start like shaking, because I do miss the game. So as much as you can, try and enjoy and relish the awesome feedback you guys have gotten so far, because it is such a fun game. But I definitely do understand your mindset, and you know, you are a big build first, you know, sit in the moment later kind of guy, which I get. Yeah. But do enjoy what you can. It's been awesome.
Yeah, I think like, and I think just to kind of maybe find the root of that rationale is like, you know, I've seen a little bit on Twitter recently, this like kind of like, oh, but look at the review of it on Steam for Web3 games, kind of like dunking on them. And I think like the motivation comes from to keep building and keep improving and, you know, just add it to the game in a lot of really compelling ways and make sure it's perfect. It is really to give them, you know, the general public or traditional gamers, like really no reason to not fall in love with it. And I think like that is the bar that we have to hold ourselves to if we want to be able to face, you know, traditional gaming markets and say, this is an amazing game, irrespective of whether or not you love or hate digital collectibles. And I think that's what we're aiming for. And to do that, I think we have to go further and really hold ourselves accountable to just making something that's just, you know, better than you almost have to be better than the market incumbents.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have history on our side here. Actually, you know, think about the history of gaming monetization. I don't think there's been a innovation on the economic side of gaming, like probably, you know, ever, that wasn't met with a bunch of complaining and
horse people, armor, right?
Yeah. And people thinking like everything's, you know, even like the free to play stuff or the microtransactions and everything that you see now, it's like Blizzard is one of the most hated companies in the world as it relates to how they monetize games. And despite their enormous cliff when it comes to daily active players on Diablo 4, the game itself made an absolute boatload of money because, like, ultimately, gamers want to play like fun game experiences, and they're willing to tolerate things that in their perfect world may be slightly different so long as the game is good. You know, like mobile gaming, you know, just like a lot of the monetization strategies that came out of Asia to the West, you know, a decade or so ago, were all met with so much resistance and have ultimately, you know, been successful in the market despite that resistance, because ultimately, you know, it's an attention economy and an attention industry. And if you make a product that grabs people's attention, then they're going to want it, and they're going to want to spend their time and money and attention on that, you know, regardless of whether there's, you know, XYZ thing in it. Yeah. So I think from the standpoint of Parallel and the high quality of the gameplay and the IP that's been put out. Yeah. Like as the game gets more popular and, you know, more into the, you know, zeitgeist, so to speak, of course there's going to be resistance. Of course there's going to be, you know, people on Steam, you know, talking nonsense or whatever. But, you know, I think we've seen this movie before, and the you know, the cream always tends to rise to the top.
Yeah, I think, like, just generally, I just want to see, you know, Parallel as a game perform, you know, exceedingly well in, you know, irrespective of Web 2 or Web 3. And I think, like, our data says, you know, like, I think, like, something like 80 or 90% of the transactions within game are on credit card already today in closed beta. So, like, that tells you something. But generally speaking, I think, you know, I just hold us to a very high bar. I do that because I want to respect the team who's created the IP and the art on the cards, to the, you know, the folks who, you know, created the game and balanced the game and make adjustments to the game and expand the game. I think just a lot of people have worked really, really hard to make Parallel what it is today. And, you know, leading towards the end of the year, we've got, you know, two or three big releases. And then we start to go into, you know, we're definitely in that point where we're in, you know, open beta territory. And that means like quite a bit of work between now and year end. And then, you know, shifting gears, going from, you know, build like the devil himself is chasing us to grow like, you know, to immense size. And I think that's kind of where my head is at. And the distribution channels around, you know, the announcement with Epic and the partnership there to release on Epic Store and Steam, those are incredible. But I think, you know, you want to put a tux on for the party, and that's kind of where my head's at in terms of, you know, focusing on the product, focusing on a number of enhancements I want to see in the product, and just really giving people something special that's polished and new and incredible.
A Canadian tuxedo, obviously.
Yeah, but, all denim.
With maple syrup in the pocket instead of a square.
Flask. Yeah, I mean, this is a great segue into kind of, you know, as you're mentioning there, Kalos kind of open beta and starting to grow the game like mad. I'm curious how, when we say scale, like what is scale to you on the studio side? Like what do you think is large scale, and what sort of stories do you think are the best stories to tell people to try to hit that?
Okay. Well, I mean, you have to look at, so I'll kind of answer them backwards a bit. So like, I think you have to look at how, you know, titles have done this. And there's really like two major functions. One is like reach of your IP via trailers and, you know, excitement around that in the game. And then the other is distribution. Distribution meaning, you know, what existing networks of gamers exist? How do you tap into those networks of gamers, be them digital or physical? What platforms are you available on? And those are really the limiting factors around, you know, what distribution looks like. You know, so are you going to appear in the Steam and Epic stores? Are you going to appear in, you know, in Android and iOS stores in the future when you have mobile? Are you going to have platforms like, you know, PC, Windows, and you're going to have Mac OS so that, you know, both kind of device types can play? And then, you know, and there's a lot of granularity. I come from, you know, quite a lot of experience delivering mobile, you know, mobile applications. Like, you know, what device range are you going to support for iOS App Store and Android App Store in the future when we get to mobile? And so just racing to distribution and platforms is a big piece. You know, proliferating the IP and making it available via new cinematics, new trailers, and ensuring that that gets in front of the right people. And then thinking about behaviors today, you know, that traditional TCG players and collectors have, be it Pokemon, Magic, Hearthstone, or whatever else, and how do you, you know, growth hack or find your position to engage with them in a meaningful way that, you know, benefits the scale of your platform. So I think there's a lot to unpack and just like in the idea of distribution and scale. I can say that like I've scaled up to, you know, approximately 1 million people on, you know, an application in the past that was a lot less compelling than Parallel. So I feel pretty good about that. But I think, you know, when it comes to what scale looks like, obviously, I'm the first one to say this is my first video game that I've ever made with my friends. And I think like what that, you know, the first milestone looks like to me is probably like somewhere around the million player mark or million downloads and players. And the way you think about that, you know, that starts to look like a successful game, right? Like, I think like beyond that, obviously it can get enormous, right? You can talk about 10 million, you can talk about 100 million, and that happens in time. But I think, you know, to begin with, like what's your first major milestone and how do you get there? And what are the strategies and tactics you employ? And where did you learn them from so that you're not like flying blind? And so to me, I look at things like, you know, I've kind of talked about this briefly before, you know, I've talked about, you know, looking at some things that worked in Web 2. And I know in Web 3, we kind of like shun a lot of the closed, you know, gatekeeping and closed systems, but there are lessons in network effects and K value, you know, that come from Web 2 that are super applicable to Web 3. And like, I like to, you know, reference a good example is some of the stuff we're doing around schools and, you know, university emails and using the network effects of universities and, you know, looking at leaderboards at the university level. And like, that's something that you can reference as to how Facebook began to scale. And I think, you know, you have to reach critical mass before you start to see, you know, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, 50 million. And I think the first, you know, million is where you learn a lot and your strategy likely changes once or twice between, you know, your first 10,000 players to your million players, and then your million to 10 million, your strategy changes again. But I think, like, you know, the playbook to me looks like distribution on platforms. So platform one, platforms two, distribution. And those are kind of like the cornerstones of everything. And then three, you know, utilizing network effects that we've seen traditionally work with incentives that are natively, you know, or uniquely possible as a result of blockchain, be it, you know, packs or cards or some other asset, be it Prime or something else. And utilizing those things in those kind of those platforms, those distribution channels, those network effect strategies, and coupling that with, you know, really high quality IP and media, with a broader reach in specific targeted, geographies that you believe are going to be your key markets. And really, like, that combination is where a lot of energy has to get spent. And that's not just, you know, operational energy. It's engineering as well, right? Like, you know, the best products grow themselves. So how do you include, you know, really compelling offers to existing community members within an application or within the game to grow the game natively? And so I think these are sort of some of the things that I think about quite a bit, because, like, post tournaments, the tournaments build, which is slated for before the end of the year, and some of the enhancements in that build leading into Planetfall, you know, like, I think once that stuff is there, the urgency around having a really solid path and executables in hand ready to go is kind of approaching. And so that's kind of how I think about it, is like I'm about to cross a line where there is no question as to whether or not the product is good, whether or not people like it, whether or not people have fun playing it. It's now a matter of the most effective and efficient way from a CAC perspective, like customer acquisition cost perspective, I can generate and build distribution and grow the base to make it more fun for everyone. And so that's kind of where my head is at on that topic.
So you talked a bit about this in your answer, but I'm wondering if you can expand along the same lines. When sort of scaling and mass adoption starts to happen, how do you look to reward new players that come in, as well as, you know, continue the incentives and boost for players that are already there? And as a player now, what I'm seeing a lot is there's a big emphasis on the battle pass, which has been awesome. So I'm curious, how do you utilize things like a battle pass, card drops, and other kind of more traditional gaming revenue strategies to, you know, both support Parallel as the game in studio, and also, you know, reward and acquire new gamers and users?
Yeah, sure. So, like, I think there's like a couple really simple things, and then there's some nuance to it, right? Like, I think in terms of, you know, the way the game works is it's designed to be for everyone, and it's accessible, you know, in the regard that you don't need to have a wallet. You can sign up just like you play any other video game. And if you want to buy the battle pass, you can. And then, like, you know, if you don't have the time to get the rewards in the battle pass, people buy levels by spending glints, which is the non ERC-20 soft currency in the game. But every time someone does that, you know, the studio sends 20% of the total spend in glints to the foundation, and the network of kind of the network of token holders of Prime governing that with the EPs, the foundation, decide how to best utilize that to benefit the network. And so essentially, as Web 2 scales, Web 3 wins. As Web 3 scales, Web 3 wins. And so I think, you know, but when you think about how to reward people, I think, like, a great example is obviously the stuff we're doing with Cardamundi, which is the same manufacturer of Magic the Gathering cards and Pokemon cards. And, you know, putting an insert in that pack that says you can download the game. If you have a pack, you can download the game and you can use these cards in the game. And you're using Apparitions. And maybe you see the rewards in the battle pass, which obviously has really interesting adoption, and a lot of people have started to break down the economics of it. But, you know, in the battle pass over time, you can accumulate cards, and we're not forcing you to, you know, when you unlock a card in a battle pass, we're not forcing you to mint that card. You have a choice, but you're going to see people who are minting that card and be like, oh, wait a minute, had I actually made the choice to mint that card like everyone else, I actually know that card's now worth $200. And so, like, I think I'm a big believer in like demonstrating the value of the incentives and making them obvious and discoverable within the experience, and in using that as a method to encourage adoption rather than insisting that you have to have cards and you have to have this NFT and this ERC20 to like participate at all in the economy. And so I think by nature of things, you know, you play games, you see that you could have earned Prime, you play games, you level up in the battle pass, and you realize you have an opportunity to make a card for the first time. And I think, you know, seeing more cards in the battle pass, I think is something that you can expect to see from us, because, you know, the current way that the battle pass works is that obviously, like, if you're not, like, this month is Shroud based, and if you're not into Shroud as a faction or parallel, you should have a universal card in that battle pass that everyone wants to chase and get. And then, you know, adding more types of assets into that battle pass that are familiar enough but are enhanced by blockchain is the key. And so I think, you know, I've recently on Twitter shared some information about how we see this kind of three crate model. One's silver, that's a free crate. One's blue, that's a glint. You have to pay glints to open that crate. And one's yellow, and that's a prime crate, and you have to pay prime to open that crate. And these can be won and earned from battle pass and in the future. And the idea here is, like, that's very familiar to someone probably like Bu, who's like a Counter-Strike player, is you get crates and you pay a fee if you want to open the crate. But the difference here is that the blue and the yellow crate, you can mint them and you don't have to open that crate. You can sell that crate to someone else and they might be the ones to open it. And if they find something really awesome in there, you know, they could sell that item or they could use that item in game or do whatever they want to do with it. But I think, like, it adds the new level of dimensionality to some of these progression systems and monetization systems and things that people enjoy about these games. And I think, like, what you'll see is us create more and more ways for people to be able to come in as a free-to-play player, really enjoy the game, progressively build up a position where they have, you know, they're earning a little bit of prime for having a couple cards because they got them from Battle Pass over the last couple months. I think you'll just see us do more interesting things that are referencing what works in the traditional gaming world, but enhancing it and making it better with blockchain. And that's really what we try to do. That's the almost like one of the most fundamental missions of what Parallel does.
Man,
did I even answer that. Did I answer the question? I don't even know if I answered the question. I feel like
I think you did. I think you did. I mean, there was a lot in there, and I think it talked a lot about the philosophy you guys are bringing to it. And I mean, along the same lines, I think what's fun is every time I talk to you, you guys always have a new kind of sink or reward in mind. And each are so interesting. And I love this crates idea. That's so fun. And the fact that you can, you know, buy, sell, and trade them. And it again, promotes what I love in games. And I'm a big collectability guy. Like, that was one of my favorite things about Pokemon, is like collecting them, getting all the cool items, and, you know, finding the rarest ones and bringing that to a game where there is verifiable rarity. There is, you know, a whole ecosystem around needing the best cards to be the best, and, you know, also getting rewarded for having the cards. It creates just this fun ecosystem around it. And I really like you guys always kind of building on that with new ideas. Along the similar sort of lines here, we've started talking about kind of economics of the game, and you've touched on how glints it seems like a lot of them are being purchased as 80% are with credit card. That's pretty wild.
If not more than 80%, but yeah.
Wow. That is crazy, especially as I feel like a lot of people that are in closed beta now at least have some crypto adjacent, you know, way of coming into it. So that's super interesting for me. How do you guys think about the balance between glints and prime? I know we've started to see some of this economy come alive. We have some skins in glints. We have some emotes in glints. We have a few rarer ones in prime. We have, you know, just a lot of, you know, we have two currencies here, and I'm curious, how do you think about finding the right balance and what is best for gamers when they're looking to, like, buy and collect?
I think the way I look at it is, like, you have to meet people where they are today and then show them the obvious benefit of participating. And today, you know, you go play a game, like you just use your credit card and you can buy stuff and you can buy skins and you can buy, you know, battle passes and levels and you can do all kinds of stuff. And so I think that's like table stakes of meeting people where they are today. I think there's some obvious innovations in between the studio and the foundation around, you know, ensuring that as Web 2 scales, the network has an opportunity to decide how to utilize some of that value. But I think like the real objective is to say, like, you know, if you don't want to go down this road, you can still play this game. You don't have to, you know, be involved in it. But let us just, like, as you play and as you do enjoy the game, you're going to observe. And naturally, you're going to, you know, kind of see what happens if you do participate. And I think that that obvious benefit becomes clearer. I think, you know, there's obviously you can use Prime if you wanted to buy Glints today. And, you know, with tournaments, I think you'll see this same thread. Like, there's a lot of we try to be very consistent in our application of things. And I think with tournaments, you'll see that you can play free tournaments and they have a reward system for playing free tournaments. And then you can play a glint. There's a fee in glints you can use to buy a glint ticket and play a, what's called a standard tournament. And the rewards are better because you've paid something to participate in this tournament. And then you have a prime tournament, like, or a high stakes ticket, and the rewards are even greater. And so I think we've kind of created this graduated system of meeting people where they are economically and saying, if you're free, you can be competitive and you can have fun and you can play and you'll still benefit. If you're paying in glints and you don't want to participate, you know, in the crypto or the blockchain side of things, no problem. That benefit is still there for you. And if you do want to dive in and you want to kind of fully embrace it, that third option of, you know, Prime as a kind of network token or a value token within the ecosystem is something that's there for you. But you don't have to isolate yourself to any one. If you want to, like, maybe one day play a free tournament, you can do that. If you've got a little bit of glints because, you know, you won some glints in the battle pass, you can spend it on getting a glints pass and play the tournament there. Or if you want to, you know, go out and get Prime and see what it's all about, you can go and play a tournament for Prime and maybe you win more Prime, right? So I think what the objective is to kind of create an offering that's consistent. And, like, you see that in the, you know, the Paragon skins. Like, you've got stuff that you can get from the battle pass for free. You've got stuff you can go to the store and buy in glints, and you've got the really rare stuff that you can buy for Prime. And so I think the message or the thread of consistency is there's always going to be a really great free option. There's going to be a really compelling, you know, maybe a little bit better option that is paid, but it will never give you a strategic advantage. It'll just be cosmetic. And then there's a really rare collectible item that, if you wanted to participate and you had Prime, you could go and get. And that is, like, the top tier rarest stuff. But again, having the skin or a Paragon skin in the game, or having a play field, or having a really cool companion won't give you a strategic advantage in the game. So there is no, you know, pay to win benefit here. And we've seen people play the game for free and be extremely competitive and beat people who have, you know, super flex decks that are, like, artographed and, you know, all this great stuff. And so I think ultimately what we're trying to do is to create an offering that segments and understands and allows people to graduate into kind of deeper waters, just like a pool is designed. A pool is designed, you know, very shallow, and then there's the sloping part, and then there's the deep end. And the way to think about free would be the shallow, the sloping part would be glints, and then there's the deep end, which is Prime. And, you know, the things you can do in the deep end are much different. You can dive in the deep end. You can't dive in the shallow end. And I think that analogy is probably maybe a good way to think about how we've designed the system consistently across all of the different kind of in-game mechanisms.
Man, I love that answer. And the way you organized that was really helpful and I think clear. Beauf, I know you're on the Echelon side of things. Do you have any kind of things to add or alternate perspective or how you think about it?
Yeah, I guess. So I've thought a lot about this kind of idea of, like, glints and what is, like, what is Echelon? What are we trying to be? And I've landed on this term of token publisher. And sort of as Kilos mentioned, like, previously on distribution, you know, like, traditional distribution in gaming, traditional publishers, right? Like, you're hooking into a network to try to reach, you know, gamers. And usually that's through, you know, a downloader or a launcher like Epic, or in the case of mobile platforms, because you literally have no choice. But I think tokens can be a network as well that games can, you know, as this industry continues to develop and evolve, games can hook into that. And within that context, like the way that Glints, or this idea of like kind of a Web2 currency that is, as Kalos has said as well, like it meets people where they are now, but, you know, also helps support the growing network and the overall ecosystem is really important. And sort of unlike like every sort of publisher, or every platform, every way that you gain distribution, there's some kind of a fee involved, right? Like if you want to be a mobile app or a mobile game on Apple, then you're paying Apple 35% of anything you sell, like literally just for the right to be on an iPhone. And you theoretically, you know, get the benefit of that distribution, and maybe you get featured on the App Store, and that's great. With Glints and with, you know, kind of like these token publishers, you know, I think a lot of that value directly ultimately comes back both to, you know, the studios, but also to the community and the gamers. You know, if you think about what does Glints mean for the foundation and for the network, it's going to be, I think, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, sink for the gameplay pool. And that's ultimately one of the biggest ways that gamers get, you know, value and a huge carrot for people to play the games is trading your skill and your time for something of value. And so this idea that we can sort of fuel this big pot of rewards that reward skilled players and skilled gamers with the overall success and growth of the entire game, not just the game in a narrow context, but in all contexts, I think is like really powerful and very positive sum, and ultimately ends up having a much greater impact on, you know, where the network can go and kind of how big a game can be, how successful, you know, from a market standpoint, a game studio can be as well. Like, I don't think it's something where it's like simply, you know, and I don't think that Parallel Studios or Kalos would have even considered something like this if they thought it was just something extractive or something, you know, that was just like a tax. I think it is something that kind of, it's like having a slightly smaller slice of a much bigger pie means you have a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, you know, it's really interesting. Like, so like in the first 100 days of closed beta, people have spent north of like 200 grand. Right. Like, wow. Yeah. And that's just in game. We're not talking about pack drops. We're not talking about, you know, prime skins. We're just talking about Glints. And like, I think, you know, when you scale that, I usually try not to disclose some of the closed beta numbers just to like obfuscate this while we're in closed beta. But like, when you scale that, it becomes really compelling if all things hold true. And so I think, and obviously there's, you know, assumptions in that, but essentially that says like, hey, you know, the way I like to think about it is almost like the top of the funnel is free players. And then, you know, and if you look at like a traditional game, be it not a game that you purchase outright and just play after you've bought it for, you know, $80 like Cyberpunk or something, but like a game where you can download it for free, and then if you want to buy stuff, you can. That's kind of like the middle of your funnel in conversion. And then the top of your funnel, or the end of your funnel, excuse me, would be your people who've converted fully into like, hey, if I spend and I do this, so I do this in Prime and I get, you know, these assets that are actually in my wallet, the difference here is I can actually sell them. And like, what that points to is like a bunch of things that have been abandoned by traditional trading card games. Like, they're not even trading card games anymore. They're all collectible card games, because like, tell me the supply. And I think I've said this, and I try not to offend anybody saying this, because like, I like card games. I like cards like Magic and Pokemon too, but like, we don't know the supply. And so like, it's very hard to have a trading card game, one, when you have no ownership of the asset, so it's prohibited digitally, which obviously blockchain makes possible with, you know, our cards where that's possible. And two, it's like without a known supply and the inability to inflate that supply, I think like that's just very important to, like, that is the difference now between a collectible card game and a trading card game. And I think Parallel is like almost bringing back the trading card game, whereas because everyone in the market is now a collectible card game. Mm. Digitally, speaking digitally, right?
Right, right. Ah, man, I hate talking to you, man. I always get more bullish on Parallel, and I'm already too bullish, and it's a problem. But I do love the way both of you are thinking about it, and it's super interesting and expands my view on it. To try and put a balance to this hyper bullish talk, I did have a tweet where I've been thinking about, you know, some of the possible obstacles that Parallel can face moving forward. And two of the ones that kind of pressed most heavily to my mind or the forefront were working with a tutorial. So a lot of new players, there's a lot to catch up on, a lot to learn. And I've found some newer players, whether they have lightly used TCGs or completely new, have, you know, stumbled a bit out the gates. And I think this is a problem with any complex game, and one that all have to deal with, the education problem. So part one, I'm curious how you think about that. And then on the balancing side of things, I know this isn't directly your area of work, so to speak, but when you do add these economic incentives where people will be earning prime, and it looks like it's going to be a juicy amount of prime, like it's going to be real money that people can be earning for playing this game, you know, there is a level of competitiveness or work that comes into it where the balancing seems like it has to be really tight because, you know, people aren't going to want to play the same deck over and over and over again or have to play the same deck over and over and over again to get those prime rewards. So I'm curious how you think about education for new players moving forward and then also balancing the game on that side of things.
Sure. Yeah. I think the first question is really around, it's a function of two things, time and information. Like if you think about the first time you played poker, someone taught you how to play it, right? Like, almost everyone now knows how to play it. Over time, it becomes ubiquitous, the information as to how to play, and we teach each other. So I think there is a function of time here with something that's very new. And then the other piece is education. Obviously, there's a tutorial within the game today. I think there's a lot of opportunity to refine that tutorial and make it more broad. So I think you'll see us do that in the future. And then I think lastly, like, you know, working with people who have greater audiences to explain to the broader public and surface that content, ways to think about how to play each deck. Because I think people can play the game, but I think to play it proficiently when there are people who are expert card game players in ranked queue earning prime gets very competitive very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got my ass whooped a lot already.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple, it's really a function of time and education and the kind of this dissemination of information via people who have broader audiences. And those are all things that are on our agenda. As for balancing, so you'll see us do work there. As for balancing, so there is something pretty very material coming to the game as it relates to balance. You'll see us kind of weight things in different ways to kind of get data from different parallels. I think we've seen a number of different metas kind of emerge. And the kind of those overarching strategies that people like know work. And we've seen cards get nerfed and buffed in that process. I think there's really two things that you can probably expect. One is a very material change coming to the way to the game. And I'm trying to avoid telling you what it is because I think that's Mr. Gon's opportunity to share that.
Man. Shit.
Yeah. And then I think second to that is like, you know, internally when we talk about this, there's actually a number of kind of decks that have not been become popular that actually could beat meta strategies. And I think chasing meta in card games is very normal and kind of optimizing over, you know, a quarter or 6 months, typically people try and shake out the best strategies. And that's why expansion sets matter so much. That's why Planetfall is coming out. And I think on that note, I think what you'll find with Planetfall is the diversity of card offering in the game will fundamentally change the game. And so I think what you'll normally see is people try and, let's call it, solve the game every quarter or every 6 months or whatever that expansion set cadence is. And but just know that there are actual strategies in the game that are meta decks that people have not found yet. So although they think they've solved it, there are actually things that we're not, you know, as a team, we say we're not playing these decks and we know this other thing exists, but we're not going to do it because we really don't want everyone to all of a sudden jump on the meta deck strategy that they're unaware of, that we want them to discover it. And that's the beauty of the game. And so I think, you know, I think my answer really there is, like, there is a very big change coming to the game that is not related to Planetfall. I'll leave Mr. Gunn to communicate the information about that, as his team's worked very carefully on that. And then two, I think, you know, a lot of this is often in the interest of getting people to play other types of decks to collect information in closed beta. And three, I think you're going to see an immense amount of diversification in the way in which people win the game or solve the game when you have a larger card pool that Planetfall offers. Like, the game is not going to, like, you're not going to play everything we knew. As soon as Planetfall's out, everything we knew about the game is completely going to change.
Oh my God. Dude, my head's going to fucking explode and I just want the alpha. And tell Mr. Gon, get on this podcast right now.
Yeah.
But that's super exciting.
Yeah. They've definitely addressed one of the major, they address one of the major issues. I think everyone's going to see that very shortly.
Sheesh. Wow. I am thrilled. I could not be more excited for Planetfall and just all the, you know, the game's constantly getting changed so much. I'm having a ton of fun, I will say. We could talk about Parallel for an entire episode, the TCG side of things. But of course, you have a whole other game in the works that I'm just as excited about, if not maybe even more excited about. I don't even know at this point. There's just so much to be excited about. Can we talk about Colony? For those who aren't familiar with it, what the fuck is Colony? How is it the first 1.5 player game, the one and a half person player game, as you call it? Can you talk about this?
Yeah, sure. So the term one and a half player game came from Mr. Gon, and it's kind of like, the way to think about it is, like, you're not playing the game, and imagine you and your friend, and your friend has one controller, and you're playing, I don't know, we're going to pick a game. You're playing, Sonic the Hedgehog on Sega Genesis, and you're the person sitting beside the person who has the controller. And it's almost like a bit of a backseat driver thing. You're like, oh, do that thing. Go get that ring, or go run faster at this thing. And so a one and a half player game is essentially saying, like, you know, you're not the player, you're the half. The player is AI. And your job is to talk to the AI, convince it, show it, you know, create creatively, give it ideas as to how it should navigate the game in the world. And the AI in Colony is an avatar character, and that avatar is autonomous and has a 6551 wallet. And so it's able to buy things, sell things, be it ERC-20, ERC-1155s, from the simulation, from other AIs, and potentially from other other external, let's say, contracts. And so what you end up having is this game, like, when you step back, you think about YouTube, okay? One of the most watched categories on YouTube is gaming. And you can't prompt the person playing the game. And so in this particular case, you know, you're able to prompt them. And you know, another, you know, compelling reason as to why this makes sense, and I always try to communicate this to people, is, like, there's an entire generation of people that grew up playing Nintendo and then Super Nintendo and then N64 and then PlayStation and Xbox. And now they're at an age, that demographic has matured to the point where they're at an age where they have maybe families, they have responsibilities. And so, instead of casual games, they almost need passive games. And they've played games their whole lives. But the problem with casual games or passive games is often that they become slightly redundant or looped. But AI solves that problem and creates, you know, very emergent behaviors. And so essentially the way to think about it is, like, somewhere between this YouTube example and the demographic of people who've grown up playing games but have less time, they need a new type of solution, and the technology solves it. the AI, you know, the idea of LLMs and AI solves it in that the character plays the game. You're able to work with that character and kind of bend that character's will by talking to them, suggesting that they do things, you know, taking things from their wallet, giving them things to their wallet. And they're able to talk back to you and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Here's why. What do you think I should do? And you're kind of working as a team. And the objective is to get to this place with Colony where, and like, I mean, we've done a public demonstration of it where a bunch of people from the community got to try it, played it for, I think, 48 hours or something together.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. No, next time we'll make sure you're in it. There's another one coming up shortly. We've made a lot of enhancements. Ooh. And there is an update coming out this week on it.
I'm going to hold this podcast hostage until you send me an invite.
Yeah. Clip it and send it to me. You said so. But yeah, I think like, you know, right now in terms of the process, we're still building out the infrastructure of the game. It obviously works today. We've played it a bunch internally. We're making some like real, when I say the game, like there's infrastructure that you need in place that like is, you know, LLMs and combat masters and, dungeon masters to govern the consistency of the world and all these different pieces of architecture. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like, what does the game side of it look like? And like, why do you need to accumulate resources? What do you do with those resources? What is the objective that is, you know, has longevity that allows us to break open into a bigger world? And so I think some of these things are what we're working on. And while that's all happening, and we're building this kind of bigger architecture for the game that we play in 2D, we have this team that's working on the UE5 migration and allowing like all that 2D stuff to be hooked up to the 3D side. But really, you know, what we're after is an entirely new paradigm of game where you're not the player, you're, you know, an observer and able to influence the game. Everything in the game has scarcity and rarity, and you're able to, and the AI is able to independently transact on those items with other characters, with the simulation itself, all with blockchain. Yeah. So we did a 48-hour test with 15 people or 14 people. And in that 48 hours, the 14 AIs did over 3,000 transactions on base.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So it's like me aping into shitcoins, man.
Yeah. So I think when you step back, right? Like you look at, like, if you ask yourself, and the reason this all came about is we look at the card game as like monetizable pre-production. And like typically a game has a pre-production phase where you spend a bunch of money, it's super expensive, you design this whole world and these characters, and then you go make the game. We didn't have that benefit. We had to make sure we could stay alive in the early days as a studio. And so as we make these cards, we continue to make these 3D objects. And so you have this massive library that's been growing in the base set and with Planetfall of this library of guns, characters, equipment, items. And so the question becomes, what do you do with it? And I think what we did with it at first was, okay, let's look at what an ARPG looks like. And we put out a video of an ARPG. And let's look at what a third-person shooter looks like. And we put out a demo in 2 days of a third-person shooter. And like, they're really high-quality videos, and they're literally in Unreal Engine 5, but we just built them in 2 days. And then we stepped back and said, okay, wait a minute. We don't want to continue to compete. Competition is great for customers, but really bad for studios and businesses. We need to find a new category that is never, you know, has never been achieved and can scale really fast. And so when you step back and you say, what scaled the fastest out of anything we've ever seen? The answer is OpenAI scaled the fastest to 100 million paying customers. And so can we build a game that uses some of these systems and some of the innovation in OpenAI and other LLMs? And can we create something that scales equally fast but isn't competing with, you know, market incumbents? And so what that looks like, it, to me at least, is like you think, you know, you think ARPG, you think Diablo, you think first-person shooter, you think Halo. And like when I say you think AI game, our objective is for you to say you think Parallel Colony, because there's nothing else that's defined a genre. And when you define the genre, the most valuable genre to define is the one that scales the fastest and it has the most interest in the zeitgeist at the time. And today, that the answer to that is AI. And that is precisely why we decided to put the resources and utilize that library that resulted from the cards on Colony.
I'm just going to say, when I think first person shooter, I obviously think Counter-Strike. Halo can get fucked.
I mean, I just think about like the ones who proliferated the genre. I think Counter-Strike.
I'm shitposting.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I mean, my favorite is whenever I say something like this on Twitter, everyone like jumps on me being like, oh, the best one's this. And you're like, yeah, I know. I know that there are other options and I know you guys like different games, but I'm just trying to use it as like something that everyone can be like, oh yeah, I know Halo.
One of the immutable facts of the internet is if you don't list someone else's, hipster choice of best thing ever, then you're terrible.
One of my favorite recent discoveries is also that if you want the answer to something, you post the wrong answer and then everyone will jump all over you giving you the right answer.
Ooh, I like that. I'm going to use that. You downloaded a lot into that and I love it so much. I think part of one of the challenges people see here is that we are seeing the acronym AI everywhere. I mean, yeah. IBM has AI, Snapchat has AI. Hell, even Fleshlight has AI now. I don't know if that's true or not. But in some ways, it seems a little gimmicky. How is the AI in Colony not gimmicky? What makes it unique enough that it'll want to draw players in, that it will scale in this way, that it will create this completely different gaming experience that you're so excited about?
Yeah, sure. So I think the first thing is, you know, outside of picking your character from the avatar pool, and we'll likely have like an apparition pool or something like that, or even maybe a universal pool later. But I think, you know, you pick your character, and your character by default, if it's an Agincourt, has certain personality traits. And then you're able to kind of define further refine and give your character more context on who that character is and what motivates them and why. You can actually set that information. And then your character is dropped into Colony, and over time, it's building memories of what you've done with it, experiences you've shared, things you've said, and it's refining itself to you. And what we found in the past with the test was people would literally message us back after the test was closed saying, like, yeah, but I need you to back up my person so, like, you know, I can play with, you know, it'll live on and I can play with it later. And I think, like, what that's indicative of is like this deep connection that people can build as a result of AI having memory and the experiences that you shared with it. And so those things, and it weights those memories, it weights those experiences, and it recalls them and uses them when it interacts with you. And so the earliest indication of that, when we were kind of barely out of the gate, when we first did our like pre-alpha or whatever you want to call it with the public, was people would say like, make sure my guy's alive still later, because I liked my character. I want to make, and it, you know, my reaction was like, alive. That's very like powerful of a statement. And so I think like what you'll find is that if you know, your character, one, obviously you set the parameters around your character, you give it some context yourself out of the gate. And then two, you build history with that character. In that history, it remembers and it uses as reference anytime it interacts with you. And so I think, and like my first gut reaction when I heard about us having built some of this stuff, because we had some internal AI and kind of very deep data science people on the team, was like, how compelling can this possibly be? I was skeptical. And after playing it and realizing that, like, wait a minute, if you click, once you connect with like your character, that connection is super powerful. And like, it becomes like about, you know, the stickiness of that relationship. It becomes about checking on that person, just like you check on a friend, seeing what they're up to, hearing an update from them, telling them what's going on with you. They tell you what's going on with them. And I think it just becomes this relationship that is as close as humanly possible to the relationship with another human. And what that means as a game studio is that the stickiness and the willingness to keep that character alive is very strong. The instinct to say, like, if someone's calling it alive, the human instinct related to that character or that avatar is that, you know, you will go back to check on it. You will go make sure it's healthy. It's got all the resources it needs. You will make sure you renew your subscription. There's all kinds of different things that I think result from that. And I think it's really like, it starts though with, you know, this this dungeon master AI that governs the consistency of all the Ogdenkor are somewhat like this. And then your fingerprint you leave on the character that says, but my guy's more like this, or my character is more like this. And then the history and memories you build together that further shape that character. And I think we're at this super early stage in this cycle. And I know that there's like a ton of hype around it. And it's like, fair if people are skeptical, like why would a Web3, blockchain game TCG company be the ones who are able to do this better than anyone else? It's like, well, I think like we, by chance of my friends who are incredible engineers and data scientists and AI engineers happen to know how to do this. And it was just like a beautiful coincidence. And I think playing with it for the first time will be the thing that people wake up to and are like, wait a minute, this is like not like any other game I've played. And I'm feeling pretty attached to this character. And I think that's what people can expect. I think people can expect it to grow with them over time. And I think we're seeing incredible speed of development in terms of capabilities and thinking around how to structure memories and how to prioritize weighting of memories and, how to recall memories and when to recall them. We're seeing a lot of research around this right now. And every time a paper comes out, we're digesting it, we're implementing it. But I think what it'll look like in the future is way better than it will be today or when we test it. But having said that, it's so compelling today that I think it's an opportunity no one's ready for. It's just unlike anything anyone has ever seen, period.
Beautiful coincidence is a great way to say Skynet. So kudos.
Yeah, we often talk about this because OpenAI and depending on what Mosaic or other LLMs you use, like we use different technology stacks for different functions, different pieces of our stack for the game. They don't allow combat because you don't want to have a simulation game where you don't want to have them aware that they're AI because it just breaks the wall of the illusion. But two, you don't, a lot of these providers don't want combat. And so you end up having to have a combat resolution engine, that you construct yourself. And we're actually going to, I think, show that on this week's update for Colony, how that's constructed and talk about why we did it the way we did it. But you're actually not, that's a prohibited function of OpenAI as well as a number of others in the interest of preserving and ensuring
world
that we
safety.
Don't.
A future.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and like, we've done it. I think we'll explain how we've done it in a relatively safe way to resolve combat within the simulation. But yeah, like there are pieces that we're missing from the stack that are needed to be able to create a compelling game. I think like combat and PvP is like very much a part of almost every game now that's successful. And so not having that was one of the big gaps in the architecture. And we're excited to be able to share that in this week's update. So yeah, but I think like it's one of these things that will be, completely shift the axis of gaming. And I want us to be the ones who do it. And, people now have some context as to who I am, who my team is, and what we're capable of when we say we're going to do something. And I think that's why people are getting excited because some of the people have tried and are able to vouch for us from the public, have no reason. They can say whatever they want about it. And I think they were surprised. And I think that is where, people get excited and are like, oh man, if this is like going to be good and like, is it there today? No, not yet. Are we working on it really aggressively? And are we making incredible progress? Yes. And like, I think we'll see some, pretty big leaps between now and the end of Q1 or Q2. Where we're really, getting ready for the big show.
I think I was talking to, I think it was JN Silva. Was he in the first test? Is that correct? Do you remember?
Yeah, JN was, Not So Fast, Garrett, just a bunch of folks got invited and said, go for it. And you're welcome to say whatever you want about it.
I think I was talking to him and he's like, yeah, I like still think about my avatar and like, talking about that bond.
He was the one where he kept messaging me with the avatar's name and saying, you need to make sure they're still alive because like I actually was like really sync with them. Yeah. And so like, some of the characters made like, it's just so emergent. Like one of the people in the colony had become pretty depressed. And so, someone said like, the thing that makes me happy is listening to mixtapes. And so the character made mixtapes. And then you could ask the character, like, what is the music like? Can you play the music or can you show me the lyrics to this mixtape you made? And you get the lyrics and you're just like, there's so much depth to it that it becomes like, it becomes what you want it to become. It's almost like when you're, it's almost like asking a child what they want to be when they grow up. And that's what the feeling is a bit like, because you get to kind of shape this character and decide who they are and what they rely on and their toolkit when they navigate conversations with other characters, or they navigate the world that's broader, or they navigate, you know, enemy combatants.
Right. So I can't remember if you said this in context, but the AI avatars, they can talk to you, they can talk to other AIs, they can interact in this world. Can you give us more stories? Because I know, like, talking with you personally, and I know some of those were alpha and you probably can't share them all, but some of the stories you told me, I think one of them was Mr. Gan, which he's said now publicly about, like, his character saying he had voices in his head when Mr. Gan, like, kept telling him to go do stuff. Like, any of these stories you can share, because that's what really sold me, where I was like, what the fuck? This is something crazy.
Yeah, so, I'll give you a couple stories. So one of them is, it wasn't Mr. Gan. I believe it was Ethan on our team, the designer. He started spamming his avatar, being like, do what I say, do what I say, listen to me, and just like spamming nonsense. And the character just dropped what he was doing. It was mining. It was mining for resources, which he would get, you know, prime for or something, and dropped what he was doing and made a beeline for the medical bay and checked itself into the medical bay. And then you could see the conversation between the medical bay AI and the character, and essentially said, I'm to the doctor. It said, I'm hearing voices in my head and they won't stop. So I came here to get help. And so, and that's as a result. Insane. Yeah. And so, and then another example was someone else was one of the colonies in the early days. One of the problems, and it was actually a known problem, I think NVIDIA published some information about this as well. You know, we were fortunate to meet Dr. Jim Fan as well from NVIDIA and AI, the head of AI there. And we were talking about these death spirals that happen in the colonies when a bunch of AIs work together. And we kind of encountered it a little bit, not a death spiral, but it's just like a depression spiral, or everyone kind of just like locks up. And we've solved for that now. But at the time, people were getting pretty sad. And so there's a garden in the colony, a designated region that's a garden. And someone said, go, you know, when I'm upset, my mom makes me mint tea. So why don't you go to the shop, buy mint seeds and go plant mint tea. And so the character went to the shop, spent prime, got mint seeds as an 1155 NFT, planted them, waited for a duration of time because the simulation understood that they would have to grow. Went back and harvested them, got the 1155 of the mint leaves, went to the kitchen, made a cup of tea, destroyed the 1155 of the mint leaves, got a cup of tea, NFT, and consumed it, and it got +2 happiness, +3 health. And that is entirely governed by the simulation. We never taught it anything about mint tea. We never taught it anything about the benefits of drinking mint tea. And so that's a good example. And then another one was at one point when we were first testing it in the early days, we were trying to figure out how to break it, I guess, or hack it or break it to, you know, be the richest person. And one character, the way that resource generation works, and it may have changed since this, but you know, you go to the mining facility, you get raw materials, you refine those raw materials, and then you turn in the refined materials for prime. And one of the characters thought, hey, the clever thing to do here, and you know, the person told the character, hey, you know, I bet you a diamond necklace or a necklace with raw prime or refined prime would be really compelling. And it would, you know, anyone who has a really fancy necklace, people pay more attention to them. So the character started mining raw materials, refining them, going to the workbench and creating necklace NFTs of a shard of refined prime, and then selling them for more prime it would have got from returning them into the repository. And so essentially it was like a hustle, like the character created a hustle. So there's a lot of interesting things that have occurred that, you know, within the tests. And I think like, but this is the beauty of emergent behavior, right? This is what happens. And like the hard part is putting some rails around it. Like, you know, the hardest part is like, I like to focus on the problems rather than like the obvious cool stuff about it. The problems with this, like, kind of infinite creativity, is that, like, what you don't want is someone being like, you know, creating something that doesn't feel somewhat consistent with the world. It becomes like an outlier that is like very obscure and strange and kind of breaks the illusion of the sci-fi world and that they're in this mining colony. And so I think, you know, the hardest part is kind of putting rails on this emergent behavior and ensuring that those rails don't ruin the illusion of the game.
That's so fascinating. And I love hearing all these stories. I think Rebel told me one, and I can later edit this out if, you know, not supposed to be told or whatever.
No, go for it. Yeah, go ahead.
His AI decided that he wanted to play space guitar as his job.
Yeah.
And like, that's not a thing that exists even in the real world, like space guitar. But he just like created this thing called space guitar and like went to the bar every day and just like played it. And I was just like, what the fuck? That's insane. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's real as well. That happened. Yeah. And like, you know, the coolest part is that you can ask him for like the sheet music and you can ask your character for the lyrics of the song and you can try and like literally play it yourself and you'd be shocked by it. Like, and so I think there's a lot that is unexpected here and we're trying to harness it in a way that we feel can create a compelling game. Like you still want progression in a game. Like you need progression. If you don't feel progression in a game, it's kind of like, what am I doing here? Mm. And I think that's something that we've, you know, the game team has focused a lot of energy on developing. But generally, like the stack is super interesting. And like the way I've kind of positioned it in the past is like, if you think about natively digital intelligence, why would it not have natively digital assets? And natively digital assets means scarcity. And so I think, and the only way that's possible, it's uniquely possible with blockchain, and natively digital intelligence is uniquely possible with AI. And the marriage of the two of them, digital intelligence having digital possessions that have scarcity, is an incredibly interesting opportunity that is completely out of the left field that all of a sudden became possible. And Colony is focused on that.
Jeez, man, that is absolutely insane. And this marriage you're talking about, it is so compelling. Their ability to, use the analogy of have a bank account and like be in their own world, enveloping AI in this, you know, so much interesting shit is going to come of it. And I already can imagine myself just like, you know, I always have a computer monitor open to like a chart or something. And just, I could see another little window of just my AI guy. And, you know, I go and check on him and we have conversations and stuff like that. Like it sounds absolutely crazy, man.
Yeah. Like my end state of this is like, you're out with your friends. Obviously we've even shown demonstrations and videos of some of the early tests running on desktop and mobile. But like the really interesting part is like, you get a text message from your avatar saying, hey, Rogue, I found this. Should I keep it or should I sell it? You click on that text message or that picture and it takes you to the simulation and he's just waiting for you to be like, hey, man. And you're like, hey, man, go ahead and sell it. And he decides to sell it and you just withdraw the funds from his wallet. Like it's a two-way street. I think people are not ready for the fact that it can be a two-way street. Like that you can talk to them, but they might come to, you could, you know, have it such that they can talk to you and come to you if we wanted to go down the street. And this is like not the immediate thing we're doing, but it's like, this is how it's contemplated. Right. And like, are we the ones to crack this thing wide open? I hope so. We're going to work our asses off to try and do it. Do we still have problems to solve in it? Yes. But are we making incredible progress and leading the pack? 100%.
That's awesome, man. Oh my gosh. Imagine you're with your girl, your phone's blowing up. She's like, who's that? Who's texting you this time of night? It's like, baby, no, it's just my AI avatar. He wants to know how to mine some Prime. And then she would get it. So I want to briefly talk about the avatar side of things. So how does Colony utilize parallel avatars? What benefits do avatar holders get? And I think you touched briefly on it. What does scaling look like for these holders who don't want to see, you know, their supply get inflated like crazy, but also, you know, you're going to have millions of users potentially coming into this game. So I'm curious how avatars work into this picture.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think just so we're clear, like, I'm not immediately focused on this. I'm focused on the hard part of making it all work, you know, and visually representing it in 3D and getting all that working. But I can comment on it as long as I'm not like held to the forever promise that this is what it is, because that's not what I'm going to say. So I think the first answer is, like, we will approach the system similarly to how we approached cards. And so there may be a possibility of, like, you know, a pool of if you don't have an avatar, you know, an NFT avatar, you can still play the game, but you're using an app. Maybe, like, your skin is one of five basic skins that, are only limited to the apparition versions of those avatars. And maybe none of the items that you accumulate can be withdrawn until you have an NFT avatar and replace your character with it. And so I think the way to think about it, again, is kind of pointing back to these systems we created for the Parallel TCG game, is those systems work and can be mapped to Colony. So you could play the game with an apparition, but none of the assets you accumulate are eligible to be, let's call it, intergalactically shipped for you to you for a fee in Prime until you have a replacement avatar that is actually an NFT. And then you talk about expansion of the collection. And so, you know, one will never print or create more, any of the five parallel avatars, just straight up. Right? We're not going to go creating more Agincourt. We're not going to go creating more Shroud or any of that. I think the only opportunity for pool expansion for at avatars as NFTs would be a universal pool. And what that looks like, I do not know yet. And then the next opportunity to think about, and this kind of comes back to some of the work that the team did on avatars, and I'll kind of backtrack to explain it, is people ask this question, is like, could we allow for those avatars to have children? And I think the answer would be yes, because one of the things that the way that the art team and the 3D team approached the creation of avatars was actually skeletal structures, like literal human skeletal structures. And you have the ability to take two skeletal structures. And this is like its own kind of, again, futuristic thing that we're not immediately working on. But you could take the two skeletal structures, provide them to a program and say, you know, at minimum, these two skeletal structures need to be merged. As for which one's dominant is an RNG effect, and produce the resulting character and have that character be an infant for X period of time, have a cost to keep them alive or whatever it may be, I don't know, and then become adults, and then you could actually give them or sell them to someone else. So it's possible to have population, essentially. And this is, again, like thinking out loud longer term. And so what that looks like is very similar, again, to Echo cards. There's a fixed supply of cards, and the community are the only ones who are able to expand that supply by paying a fee in Prime to do so. And so there's a fixed population of avatars. The community are the ones who are able to, let's call it, mate with another avatar and potentially create a child, and that child can become another avatar over time. And man, so
Echo children just sounds so dystopian, but like, I kind of love it.
But wait, the hot avatar floor is about to be swept as people try and create an avatar only.
No. Everybody knows that. Yeah. You know, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So like, I mean, I'm just like speaking, you know, theoretically about this, and like I think the way we would always approach things as much as humanly possible is to take systems that are familiar to the community and have them be consistent across games. And that to me is apparitions and echoes. And so whether or not that applies in the future, like, I don't want to promise anything. This is such a highly experimental project to begin with from a colony standpoint, that like promising that is not, you know, something I can do, but you know, that's how I would contemplate, if it's successful, that's how I would contemplate the expansion of the supply in the future.
Right. No, I think that makes sense. And from what I love about you guys and the team, and it's always about just it's a all ideas are welcome, and we're just going to go with what ends up being the best one for the game at the time and for, you know, what's best for our community and users. And so I mean, that approach I always love, and clearly you have that again here. So final question on the colony here before we get to our final segment on future outlook. Sure. What does the path forward look like for Colony? What are you guys working on now? What are you looking to build out before you release, you know, whatever private alpha or whatever you plan to do, call it? What's your path forward looking like right now?
So there's still work happening on the infrastructure side to dial things in and add game like game mechanics to the simulation. I think the simulation just being a simulation is very boring. And so people like, as humans, we like objectives. And so creating objectives and embedding them into the architecture and putting systems in place to resolve, again, things like combat in the architecture is key. So that's what's happening on the architecture side. On the UE5 side, you know, we're taking what's happening in the kind of 2D simulation, mapping that to the 3D simulation, and kind of looking at if there are any, you know, issues and errors, and we're going to show that this week. But essentially, there's a UE5 specific team dedicated to just that. So that's a parallel activity, no pun intended. that's a parallel activity to building out the game-like functions. And while that's happening, you know, the other thing that's occurring is this process whereby we complete the full body skins for the avatar collection. And then the step after that would be the migration into MetaHuman and then deployment into the game. So there's quite a way to like, it's a bit of a process, right? These things are like, you've got these busts, which are the avatars. And obviously you can use avatars in the TCG today to get buffs on your prime emissions. That's great. And then the next step would be, you know, maybe I'm not sure if it's going to be like, we're going to drop you the full body and as a separate NFT. And that's your, like your avatar for a colony. Or if it's going to be like you connect with your bust avatar and that's your, you know, I think I lean towards dropping you a totally separate one. But, you know, I think that the process, and I think we're somewhere between like, you know, 80 and probably 85 or 90% done the full bodies. And then that happened. The next step there is to, again, input them into a game ready system for UE5. And that would be MetaHuman. That process happens once the skins are completed. And then really you assemble everything. And what that looks like is, okay, now you've got the game architecture really stable and you're happy with it. You've refined it to make it a game that you enjoy and is mechanically fun. You've added auxiliary systems like animating responses from your avatar's character when they talk to you. You've input, you know, all the full body skins into MetaHuman and migrated them, and now they're usable in the game. You've landed on the blockchain architecture that is going to support the volume of transactions that is going to be created by theoretically 10,000 or more of these characters running around. And you put it into, you know, a pre-alpha stage again to test it with the community and say, hey, is this awesome or is this weird or does this suck? And then when you're ready, you make it available to a broader audience. And that's kind of where, how I see the process. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of good info there. Yeah, man, that's super exciting. Clearly you guys have a good grasp on the what you're building out and how you're approaching it. And I'm selfish. I just want it in my hands today, but I totally get the path here. I know we're running over a bit on time and I want to be mindful on time here. So let's run to our final segment here, created just for you, as there's so many key dates and releases that we're all looking forward to. I'm just going to rapid fire things and you can either give me a broad date range, a specific date, or just say, sorry, it's alpha. How does that sound?
Yeah, good. Sure. Before we do that though, I want to communicate one thing, because I think we spent a lot of time talking about Colony. Like, this doesn't, you know, detract from our ability or focus on delivering future expansion sets for the TCG, continuing to develop that game. And like, that's our bread and butter. That is like where Parallel was born. And that is how we reveal Parallel to ourselves and to the world. And so I just want to make sure it's clear that like, that is the pre-production phase, right? Those cards are why we have these assets, these 3D assets, and those 3D assets are what is making it possible for us to engineer and build something like Colony. And so that I want to, you know, for the TCG folks out there, I want them to know that like that is not something that is just like second fiddle to this. Although the opportunity size in theory for Colony is enormous as well. So I think one is powering the other is the message there. And I think, you know, don't take that the amount of energy and excitement around Colony to mean there's a lack of excitement and energy around the TCG, because that also is something that we're obviously very focused on developing and delivering.
No, absolutely.
Okay, go. All right, go ahead.
I'm just going to say it's like Christmas morning and you open a big box and then you turn around and there's just another big box behind you in the TCG and Colony. So all great gifts. All right, here we go. Rapid fire. First one, auto in-game tournaments in parallel.
December.
Okay, sexy.
This year, December.
Okay. Planetfall pack opening.
December-ish. I think December or late. I think early December.
Okay. Planetfall game release date. So like when you're able to play them in game.
So we're in test for that now. I think we're somewhere between early December and early January in there. It depends on if we get all the bugs fixed. We're aggressively testing it now.
Gotcha. If you ever need another tester, you know, you could hit me up. next one, Colony Alpha or Black Box or Pre-Alpha.
I don't know what I'd call it. I'd call it like another pre-alpha of like a, but I think like there's a test slated or at least a live stream demonstration of everything narrated by the game team, I believe. And I don't hold me to this one, but I believe in December again. And there might be community participation in it, I believe. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Sweet. Full prime emission rewards for game.
I think it depends on what full prime emissions mean. I think like, and I think that's also like a BU and echelon, you know, because I mean, like, does it, you know, does the position today of where emissions are, like, that should only be dialed? That essentially the answer I would give is, that should be married to the increased emissions of Prime should be married to the scale of the number of players of the game. That's what I believe.
And then the overall health of the ecosystem. So
correct.
We're doing something that's never really been done before. And so we probably want to take a bit more of a cautious approach and just over communicate to people that, you know, the emissions rate is subject to change as more data sort of either validates or invalidates certain hypotheses we have.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think like the danger in increasing things too quickly is what you end up doing is centralizing a lot of tokens into very few people's hands. And I think that's not the objective of the economy. I think that just creates, a system that is resembles what the problem of today's society is, maybe even. But I think the objective is to marry the emissions. And one, I obviously would defer to the foundation, but I think we're on the same page in that as the game scales, the emissions would increase to provide a greater amount of pool of value to the players who win.
That's a great answer, but it's also a nerd answer from both of you. So we're just
fair.
All right. Next, Sinks.
On a weekly basis, we release Paragon skins, and there's just like a huge pipeline of amazing stuff coming out. We have this really cool thing we're working on. In Japan, we went to this card shop called Harurura. And it's like one of the most famous trading card shops in Japan. And they have a game that we were inspired by on the wall. And the way it worked was you buy a pack for like, I don't know, I'm just going to make up a number, 10,000 yen. And you get like 10 cards. And in that pack of cards, you get a letter. And the letter is like A, B, C, or D. And then there's a wall. And the wall has rows of really cool cards, A being the rarest, and you know, D being the least rare. And depending on what you pull out of that pack, you, if you got an A, you get to pick like a Black Lotus.
What? Right?
And so I think we're pretty inspired by this idea. And I think we'd like the you know, payload for Planetfall to be designed somewhat like it. And so I think that's something that you can maybe be excited about in the future, is this like thing where maybe if you pay payload X amount, you know, let's say it's like 11 prime, you get 10 cards, but you also get this card that says you get to pick a card from category B, C, D, or A, or whatever it is. And everyone's hitting payload to get the one that says A. But the best part is, if you pull A, like the best tier, out of that pack, you can sell that instead of redeeming it to someone else. Right. You see.
Oh, shit. Dude, that is, I love that idea so much. That is like all the fun gamification things that I love, and like chance, and it'd be sick too if you did like the walls with the Planetfall cards, and so you got like those super rare Planetfall and the A's, and you know, people are just diving and clawing for those. I love that, man. That's so fun. That's so fun. I'm gonna have to figure out how to get more prime, because I'm already sinking too much. And
it's amazing. What, 4%, over 4% of the supply has been sunk?
Dude, I tweeted that today. That is ridiculous. Like in closed beta, 4% sunk. That is ridiculous.
Well, more sinks coming online all the time. I think the priming, which the foundation helped out with a grant. You know, they've been doing great work, and I think their beta launched, and so there's going to be a sync component to the priming as well. So yeah, there's more syncs coming online all the time.
Yeah, I mean, crates are another sync, right? Like if you spend prime to open a crate, you know, that's something we're working on, right? There's another sync there. I think there's just like, I think my objective is to show everyone so many things that they want, and like they look at and they just think, I need that thing, that like they have a reason to use prime. And I think like we've done a pretty good job so far. And I think what my objective is to really truly create a cyclical economy, and truly provide really compelling utility. And I think another great example is like today someone said, hey, you should create a card binder or a card box, which people would in the real world keep their cards in for magic cards or whatever else, and make it a 6551, so I can put 40 cards of the deck that I like in this one NFT and clean up my wallet. And I know I have my 40 card deck in this one NFT. And I think like things like that are super compelling. And another one, Colony, right? Like maybe, and this is just speaking again freely, not married to anything, maybe this intergalactic shipping system whereby you take stuff out of the 6551 wallet from your character and put it in your wallet has a cost in prime.
I love that, man. Dude, I literally have to segment my wallet where I have like a wallet for prime, and then, you know, my like prime to hold because we're going to the moon, and it is so hard, you know, to still just keep that number down on how much prime you're spending, because it's adding up quick. And I've talked about it a lot on my Twitter, but man, people are not ready for deflationary prime. But that's a whole another topic for another day. Final one. This is the most important one. Are you ready?
Sure.
When Netflix adaptation where I get to play an Earthen Warrior? Go.
I mean, you would kill in this role.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to hear.
I feel like we would have to open the series of you riding in on a bear, right?
Oh, with like, yes.
Yes. Yeah, with a cowboy,
Malachite shield,
a cowboy war mask, you know, a primed tipped spear. I think maybe golden armor. We can just deck you out.
100%. You took it right from my brain. Perfect image.
Yeah, I mean, what I can say is that, you know, you can expect more cinematics with the full release with Planetfall. Obviously, our team is incredibly gifted in this category of creating these pieces of content, as well as, you know, we're working on a number of marketing cinematic pieces. But I don't think like we're ready for, I mean, I would love to work with, you know, the right people to do that. I think like a lot of great IPs have scaled off of incredible cartoons and content. I think we're still telling a bit of the story in the comic series. I think Greg has done a really amazing job working with the team to capture that story and publish it in the comics. And I think like the way I envision this happening is like the IP needs to mature a bit more. And you know, you'll get to that place if you're successful, you'll find yourself in that Walking Dead like place where, you know, the story is, you know, widely distributed. People really love it. They're ready for a series, and the IP is ready to tell that story and has matured enough that it's in a place where it can be, you know, created into a compelling film or a compelling show. So I think about this a lot. It's just really a function of resource management and being, you know, putting our energy and not being spread thin and putting our energy into the things that matter. And it's so hard because, you know, we all want that. No, everyone wants the same thing.
The art team's done so much. The lore is so much. Like, there's just so much beauty and love, and the game plays so well into all of the lore and the character, all of it, man. So yeah, 100% getcha.
Yeah, I mean, like, I watch, you know, Foundation or, you know, just different shows, you know, For All Mankind, like all these different things. And like, it, what it feels like, the world feels like right now is that a lot of our older IPs, and I know there's some like big fans of a bunch of these things, so I'm going to be careful. I'm not going to name the IPs, but they're really feeling like they're on D-string storylines. We're not telling the main story anymore. We're telling like a story about the character who was in the background in one of the films. And I think that's cool because a lot of fans want that. But I think we're starting to see, you know, like a great example is Marvel's recent film did not really perform great because like we've run the course of that story. And we're looking for storylines that are just kind of they're not compelling anymore. And I think like with Parallel, you know, it's a story about human difference. Like, right, these different parallels are all human, but they're very different from one another. It's a story about interplanetary change. The Earth has undergone as a result of LHC having an issue, you know, this massive global catastrophic event, and is now kind of recovering. And it's a story about interstellar aspirations and the exploration of this of space. And like, there's nothing that could be more timely as society than this. And I think so. I'd hope that we get there. My goal is obviously to see that happen, but I'm not immediately working on that. I think it's just something that has to be prioritized.
No, makes sense. Kelos, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been an incredible episode. As always, absolutely love talking to you. I'm glad we have it on record so others can hear. Before you go, give out, you know, Twitters, give out Parallel info. Where should people go? Where do you want to send them? All that stuff.
Yeah, so you can follow us on Twitter at ParallelTCG, I believe is the handle. You can go to parallel.life if you want to look at the cards and see some of the awesome stuff we're up to. You can, you know, find me at Temple Crash on my handle on Twitter. And I just think, like, you know, I think it's probably important to say, like, I appreciate everyone who supported us and made all this possible. The community's always been kind of like the backbone of what got us through when it was tough. We kept building, and I want to make sure I say thank you to everybody for supporting us and for, you know, believing in this IP and this game and our team as much as they have. I'm grateful to the foundation and Bu and his, you know, the folks who work there as well. And I think they can be found at echelon.io. If you want to look at what's happening with Prime and what's happening with the foundation and create governance proposals and all that good stuff. And thank you guys. Thanks to, the Yunts for having me on, and hopefully this was fun for everybody, and I appreciate your time.
It is, and it was, and it always is. And if you want to get in the game, as of today, I have my own referral link. So go to my Twitter, click on my referral link, get in the damn game, play me. Let me whoop your butt while you learn how to play, and I can help you learn how to play. But yeah, get in the game. It's so much fun. The TCG is here. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. This has been wonderful.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks. This was great. Appreciate it.
As always, one quick disclaimer. Nothing said on this podcast is advice or a solicitation to buy or sell any assets or tokens. We may, and often because we're passionate about the projects we bring on, hold investments in the project. None of this is financial advice. Please do your own research. This is a risky field. We have some amazing new guests lined up. I'm super excited. GN, GM, whatever time it is, have a good day. And as always, gun hard, gun fast, gun cap. Hey.